Hello, hello, Lisa here. Since you're listening to this particular podcast, I imagine you're likely a leader in the area of talent, HR, people, culture, L&D, employee experience, or OD. Are you also a talent leader who is longing for a safe sounding board to bounce ideas off of? Who's thirsty for some fresh new ideas that will actually work? Who maybe needs to influence multiple stakeholders who don't always know what they want? Maybe you're somebody who wants to get out of their own way and who's ready for expert, ongoing, and confidential mentoring. If you answered yes to one or more of those statements, then we need to talk. In addition to my group programs, I work privately with a select few clients as their talent management thought partner. I will help you, over the next 90 days, finally create the space, the intention, and the strategy to implement an initiative that's critical to your team's longer-term impact and legacy. Let's chat and see if there's a fit. Book me online at greenappleconsulting.ca/contact. Welcome to Talent Management Truths. I'm your host, Lisa Mitchell. I'm a talent management thought partner and results coach, wife, and mom. Talent management leaders are hungry to learn from their peers and want to hear about real-life talent initiatives. This podcast is for and by talent management leaders. My guests and I dig into successes, challenges, and lessons learned from a very practical, not theoretical, point of view. You'll discover important insights about how to elevate your confidence and amplify your influence in a role known for being caught in the organizational middle. I'm thrilled to have you listening. So let's get going and hear the truth about talent management today. The job market is constantly in flux. Sometimes it's an employer's market, sometimes a candidate's market, and sometimes it's balanced. One trend that's here to stay is the overall decrease in employee tenure. The 25-year gold watch is no longer a norm. It's an exception. Today's guest shares his view that we need to work with the reality of shorter tenures versus be frustrated by them. My guest is Jamie Bruno. Jamie joined Ontario Tech University in 2017 and is currently Vice President of People and Transformation. Jamie has spent nearly 20 years in both HR and labor relations across the broader public sector, including serving as a CHRO at North York General Hospital, where he launched the hospital's first people strategy. In this episode of Talent Management Truths, you'll discover a window into the management side of a large and growing university, an example of a flexible work program that can help organizations go beyond existing geographic boundaries, and insight into how to reframe the fact that employees don't necessarily stay in the same company for a long time. Thanks for listening. Hello and welcome back to Talent Management Truths. I'm your host, Lisa Mitchell. And today my guest is Jamie Bruno. Jamie is the Vice President of People and Transformation at Ontario Tech University. Welcome to the show, Jamie.
Thank you.
So let's begin, as we always do, by having you share with listeners a little bit about who you are and your career path.
Sure. So I'm 20 years in the human resource talent management and labor relations space. I've been the Vice President of People and Transformation at Ontario Tech for nearly 7 years now. Work with an incredible group of people and have accountability for what most people would understand to be the full suite of human resource and talent management accountabilities. Prior to that, I was the Chief Human Resource Officer at North York General Hospital for 3 years and then worked in government, so the proper public sector in Ontario, working in a range of human resource and labor relations related activities, including executive recruitment. For a year. So responsible for the talent acquisition and talent sourcing arm of deputy minister and assistant deputy minister hires.
Okay. So lots of depth around the talent acquisition piece. And then currently you've got the full suite portfolio. What do you have a sweet spot? Like if you're really going to pick one area, one discipline within HR, what is it?
I probably would have told you leading into the pandemic that it was certainly the labor relations, the collective bargaining, contract negotiation side. But I think over the past 3.5, almost 4 years now, it really is that strategic lens and vision that I'm fortunate to play a role in as it comes to helping business units in our university achieve their goals through the talent side of things. The pandemic and the geopolitical situations that have come about over the past several years has challenged the market, and it certainly challenged our organization, our sector. So the not only the opportunity, but the need to be more strategic and dynamic with business unit leaders and faculty leaders to support the build and the growth, I think it's anchored in the talent side of things. So many different ways you can go about it. There's so many creative opportunities and, as we like to put it, evidence-based ways of moving forward and supporting the business. And that has been a really unique challenge, but an exciting thing for me and my team.
Excellent. Okay. So, you know, I want to dig into more specific stuff around what you're doing with your team. Maybe you could highlight a little bit, you know, some information about Ontario Tech U.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are celebrating our 20th anniversary this year, a big milestone for us. And over the past 3 years, we have set new milestones and records in Ontario for straight from high school applications. Our brand is growing. We're certainly making an impact in the provincial post-secondary space. We certainly have evidence of making imprints on the national stage as well. So it's an exciting time to be part of a very nimble, but growing, rapidly growing university. We have really two campuses. We're located in Oshawa, Ontario. So we have a presence on what's called the North Campus in the northern end of Oshawa. And then we're situated in a number of different buildings and have a presence in downtown Oshawa. We have 11,000 students at our university. We're aiming to hit 18,000 by 2030. We offer academic program across a host of disciplines, despite the name Ontario Tech. So we are a very diverse and really a community-based university in the sense that there is that intimate feel still between the student base, the faculty, and the staff, several who have been here since its inception. So really important connection with a number of staff that have seen from shovel in the ground to where we are now, being part of that and having their fingerprints all over the growth of our university.
Yeah. And so for listeners who aren't in Canada, as Jamie and I are, Oshawa is a city that's about an hour out of downtown Toronto to the east. So I have traveled through it mostly on my way to Quebec to see family and so on. But, you know, it's really interesting to hear more about Ontario Tech University because my son is 17. And so we're at the stage where he's got early acceptances to three schools. So we're waiting to see what he's going to choose. And and then we can start preparing for September. It's an exciting time. But bravo, congratulations on the 20-year anniversary and all of the great work that you're doing. Sounds awesome. So let's kind of dig more now into how you support the university. You were talking about the strategic lens and helping various departments and so on be more strategic and competitive in the marketplace. What, you know, tell us a bit about your team and about some of the core projects that you have going.
Sure. We have a small but mighty team. And so soon after I joined Ontario Tech, I undertook a bit of a structural redesign. So again, in line with sort of the different facets of talent management. And so we moved from a generalist to a specialist model, really focusing in on either redefining roles for existing staff or bringing new talent on board with specialty in particular areas. And that extended in particular to the professional development and to the recruitment side of the business. So rather than working as part of a jack of all trades, we wanted to bring in a deeper level of expertise in those areas. And then what that has sort of manifested itself into is on the professional development side of training opportunities that target different audiences. And certainly we have the programming that will build particular skills, either technical skills or competency-based skills. But we're proud of some of the programs that are designed, have been designed, and continue to iterate for those that are exploring opportunities to move from subject matter or subject matter expert or individual contributor to management. And then also for those that are in management now, both newcomers into that space and also those that are transitioning from manager to director to assistant vice president. So with that comes some vulnerabilities. And we're really pleased with the way that, given our size and capacity, we've been able to respond with programming that targets those audiences. What we're doing on the recruitment space in terms of building our team is looking at different ways to access platforms, perhaps that have not been available to Ontario Tech or not access to Ontario Tech in the past. You had mentioned, Lisa, about the program that we launched a couple of years ago, our flexible work program. And what that has done for us is given staff and management the flexibility to use their discretion on where people work, certainly with some boundaries and limitations, but we've been able to see the benefits directly from staff feedback on the success of that program. But I would say to extend it a bit further, we've been able to track the location of applicants and even successful hires into areas of the province that we generally weren't able to reach pre-pandemic. And the Flex Work Program then allows us to tap into talent pools that go beyond geographic boundaries. And for a school of our size, that has its growth projections tied in increasing our student population significantly over 6 years, we do need to deepen those talent pools and go beyond, like I said, geographic areas that were traditionally where we would pull talent from.
Okay. So these would be people, say, from another market, I don't know how far out, like an hour plus away, periphery, but so they're working from home some of the time and they do have to come on site, or there's some roles that are fully remote?
Yeah. So we don't have fully remote roles. We have sort of a minimum of 1 day on campus right now on the administrative side. So this is not on the academic side. This is exclusively on the administrative side, but it's a decentralized model. And what we do is we cascade the decision-making to unit leaders. And we thought that that was important because what better way to show trust in the people that are leading our business than to have them make the decisions on how their operation needs to be run. So some of our business units are student facing. And so they provide support directly to students. Students as a customer in that perspective, we have to be considerate of their needs. Do they want face-to-face? Are they comfortable with remote engagement for a variety of student services? So allowing managers and leaders in those specific business units to make those decisions allows them to customize the way they run their business to the success of the university. In response to the sort of 1 hour, the notion of the 1 hour, in Oshawa's, for those that don't know, Oshawa's in a pretty unique geographic locale. And that is that we're not too far away from Toronto, but the traffic and public transportation modes make it seem like, and very well could be, 90 minutes, 2 hours to commute, depending on where you are in the city. So even those who would consider Ontario Tech as an option for employment, if they live in Toronto, there is those sort of realities that could become barriers that we seem to have knocked down. Now, Oshawa is in Durham region. Durham region is adjacent to both the Greater Toronto Area and York region, but we're seeing applicants from northern parts of Ontario, from further west into Peel region. Those are areas where from time to time you would see, I would say, a higher and very few applicants. And now we're seeing more of that. So I think it's a testament to the work that our managers have done to build that culture around a positive, flexible work program. But the very content that's inherent in flex work has certainly allowed us to compete differently with some real heavy hitters in the post-secondary space in our area.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just the, I just saw an article, I think last week it was about how it turns out, Toronto has the worst traffic in all of North America. I think LA thought they had that hands down, but when I was there a couple of years ago, I was like, this is nothing. So it does mean, though, that, you know, going anywhere, yeah, you know, it takes some time. It's probably 2 hours for me from Mississauga to where you are, right? Like, it, which is crazy because it's really not that far geographically. Anyways, okay. Now, something else I wanted to pick up on that you mentioned when you were talking about what your team and you were working on was this evolving catalog of training opportunities. And something that I think I picked up on was this real, you know, understanding of the need for support as people transition from one level to the next. And I was wondering if you had examples of, like, what kind of supports are you doing in this training? Like, how do you meet that particular need, right? So they're moving from supervisor to manager, manager to director, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a great question. I touch on a couple issues. Leaders of other organizations that have really provided some terrific experiences and advice. So as you move up the proverbial ladder, your connection to the work that you used to do has to become a little more clouded. There is a tendency for subject matter experts to move from an individual contributor role to a manager and still be tethered to the work that they either grew up in or know best. And as they progress from manager to either senior manager or director, there continues to be that link. And so there's this invisible pull almost. And doing that certainly has its drawbacks, and it prevents growth and learning in other areas, and certainly an attentiveness or response to the expansion of duties and responsibilities that now sit with you. So what we try to do is, as an example, moving from manager to director, director to AVP, your accountabilities around finance and budgeting are enhanced. And so, again, naturally, these are some skills or some spaces that individuals aren't either familiar with, or I would say in more cases than not, they're just not comfortable with. So there is that important element. There is the growing need to adjust to the generations in the workforce and what their expectations are and how to manage or communicate with different cohorts of employees that are coming through. I think we work in more of a virtual environment than we ever have. We don't see that changing with obviously the heavier introduction of Gen AI and further digitization of workflows, work processes. We're starting to see relationships change. And so that in-person is giving way to a lot more virtual. So managing staff virtually is different than managing staff in person. Yes. We want to be able to both explore and really land on some tools and practices that respond to the realities of today and conflict management. Again, as you move up the ladder, it's not that you're going to experience more conflict, but or have to deal with it any more than you would at a manager level. But ultimately, the decision-making authority becomes more significant. The risks are more significant. You become...
And the accountability is much higher.
Exactly. Yeah. So there needs to be that sort of recognition of the fact that your profile has changed. And with that comes a higher level of risk, higher degree of decision-making than you're used to. And we want to do our best to begin bringing in, again, some tools and practices that will help individuals adjust to that transition.
Yeah, I think all of those things are so important. And, you know, you pointed out some core skills that do, or the use of these skills, the support you need for them changes as you move up, right? With the budgeting, finance, you mentioned sort of understanding the broader perspective on staffing, different generations coming in, the conflict management, all that kind of stuff. You know, something too that I think is really, really important that I've always built into the programs that I developed, you know, over the years supporting this kind of transitions was also, you know, giving space, time, reflection to sort of help people figure out how do they want to lead at that level? Like, what does it mean for them to let go of the previous level and move into this new level? It's So, you know, sort of one book I always loved and used to recommend and still do sometimes is What Got You Here Won't Get You There by Marshall Goldsmith, right? Oldie but a goodie, because it really paints the picture beautifully of how, you know, things that made you successful in a particular role or a particular level in the hierarchy may not all be appropriate or applicable in your next adventure. So, you know, the more you can be thoughtful and deliberate and intentional around how you want to show up and how you want to move forward, I think that's really critical on top of, you know, the more technical skills. I don't know. What do you think? That's my kind of take.
No, I completely agree. It's in part because of what you've seen, but it is about assessing potential. And yeah. I like the way you put it. What got you here won't get you where you need to be. It's just a starting point. And there's that toolkit that needs to continue to build and expand over time. And there's some tools you got to get rid of at certain points because the role just doesn't demand it anymore. And you need to pass that over to someone who's now reporting into you. So we couldn't agree more. Those are excellent points.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's great that you are working to support those transitions, because I think sometimes they get lost in the shuffle a little bit, right? Like they'll be training for the supervisors, for the managers, for the directors, the VPs, but then not about that, you know, like making the move and specifically shining the light on that. So it's great. So the other piece too that I wanted to really get your input on was we had talked a little bit about the overall employee life cycle. And, you know, you shared that you sort of see sometimes there is an imbalance in terms of how much emphasis they place on certain stages versus others. Can you tell me a little bit about what you've observed and your thoughts?
Sure. And again, this is really isolated to our experience in post-secondary and specific institution. But up until about 6 months ago, the market was different. The talent labor market was a little different. We saw the depth of our talent pools a lot more shallow than they had been in years prior. That certainly aligned with the data and the research around the transience of labor coming out of the pandemic and extending for a while. A lot of information and reporting around that balance that people are isolating as a priority more than ever before. That balance between I need to work with an employer whose values align with mine, where my personal life won't take a back seat to my professional responsibilities, where that advocacy and support from the employer is more tangible than before. Now, we've started to see over the last 6 months a bit of a spike in our applicant pool. But what I would say to your question, Lisa, for the most part, you invest a lot of your time at the front end of that employee life cycle. So that talent acquisition, talent hire portion of it. And then there's almost this collective breath that we've got the person in and now we will let sort of nature take its course. There's sort of built-in pathways within any organization to support growth, to network, but it's almost a handover and the hard work's done. And I think what the last 2 years in particular has told us is that's where the work just begins. And so as much as the front end of the employee life cycle, in my opinion, was weighted a little more heavily than the other aspects, you're starting to see an equalization that it's as important and as much an investment find and secure talent as it is to onboard them, as it is to train them and build their capacity, both skills and competencies. And so we have to do a better job, and I suspect other organizations are finding a similar experience, that most employees are not sticking around for that 6, 8, 10 years anymore. And what I find interesting is that organizations I've been at always respond to market conditions when it comes to talent and labor. And so, as we talked about, the generations of work each have different interests. They have different characteristics. And so employers are sort of tripping over themselves to create that nexus between what we can offer and what you need as a unique individual in the labor market. And so recognizing that there is this shift, that employees are not likely to stick around for 6, 8, or 10 years as they have perhaps earlier in the 2000s, well, why not take advantage of that? Why not work with the benefits that come with having employees join your organization? And just because they may not be in the role they're hired for 6 or 8 years, I think what it says very loudly is they're looking for new experiences. They're looking for growth. They're looking for change. Why not look at creating career pathways internally? I know, obviously, a number of organizations, particularly private sector, hone in on apprenticeship programs and those professional pathways. And so with us, I think universities are a little behind in that evolution, but understand who you're getting in, recognize, and I would say, don't fight back on the fact that, yeah, Lisa may come and may only stay for 36 months, but what can we get out of Lisa? And if it's someone that's really value add to the organization, where is it that we can now within the employee life cycle demonstrate to Lisa that there are opportunities elsewhere in our organization, will help you get there. And that's commensurate with the programming that we have to develop and curate over time.
Yeah. So it, you know, it's this whole, you bring up an important issue because if you do have a shorter term kind of workforce, people aren't hanging out for the gold watch. Certainly, remember 25 years, you know, my dad's day, geez, he's 40 years in the same place kind of thing, right? So unheard of really now. So how do you work with it? So swim with the current versus against it is what I'm hearing you say. And I really think that that's wise, you know, and there's different ways to look at it. You know, you're talking about the employee life cycle and then there's the employee experience, right? So if we sort of say, how do we want people to experience the hiring process, the onboarding, and then how do we want them to experience the day-to-day and how they're continuously developed, and how do we want them to experience learning about other opportunities and growing their perspective of the organization? So it's you know, when you start looking at it from the employee's lens, I think you're asking better questions, and then you have better ways reveal themselves about how do you, to your point, get the most out of Lisa or Jamie, you know what I mean, while they're here. And then the other thing that came up when you were talking, for me anyways, was if we're going to accept that the reality that is that people aren't going to stay that long, how do we maximize their potential while they're with us? And how do we get in front of knowledge transfer? How do we mitigate for the loss of human capital, knowledge capital, and make it smoother since it's going to happen?
Absolutely. And I would say there's, to pick up on your last point, Lisa, there inherently is a disruptive outcome when an employee transitions, but it certainly is less disruptive when that employee is transitioning to another role in your organization. So if it's someone that really can add value and longer term, has a pathway to, whether it's lateral or not, you want to keep those people. And what we've discovered is that there is that natural and understandable pushback about, I'd love to hire someone and have them stay for 6 or 8 years. But when it's not the reality anymore, then shifting that paradigm and that mental model, say, okay, we may have this person for 2 years, perhaps sometimes less, but taking a more proactive role in understanding what it is that they have to offer beyond what's perhaps in their job description, and then being an engaged leader, putting the corporate hat on and saying, yeah, I know Lisa may not be with me sitting at this desk in this role more than 2 years, but there is a great opportunity for her to add value in other roles and different units. And ultimately, we're playing for the same team. So I just think that it's a hurdle that we haven't quite overcome. I'm sure in speaking with a number of my colleagues, they've experienced and haven't been able to overcome overall. But I think I will go back to my point. There's a history of observing organizations respond to the market. And this is just one sort of point in time where there just seems to be a lot more resistance, and there's a great way to take advantage of it, but it's not easy to figure out.
No, it's not. And it demands a different way of thinking a little bit, right? Like you've got to be innovative, you know, and so, I mean, that's true. Any time when you feel some natural resistance, like, oh, I wish it wasn't this way. Geez, you know, it's so annoying because we know how expensive it is to bring new people in and train and, you know, help them be successful. You don't want to have to keep repeating it. But again, if that is the reality, how do you make their experience and their potential of career progression within the organization as possible or as positive rather, then, you know, maybe they will stay longer than you think, but in the meantime, you're going to mitigate for the potential that they might turn over, whether it's internal churn or external, you know, moving on. There was something else too that came to mind for me here was, you know, you were talking about shift the paradigm. That's exactly what I'm referring to, right? Like it's sort of like, okay, hang on here. It's the reality. So let's just kind of just relax into it. You know, I think there's something to be said for that. So when you think about what's ahead for Ontario Tech University and your team and your role in this year, we're recording in January 2024. So it's early days in the year. What's ahead for you? What are you excited about?
There's a lot to be excited about at our university. Our trajectory has been very steep and very positive over the last several years, but in particular, the last 3 years. We're really excited from a people side of the business to be able to work alongside our business leaders on the scaling of our organization. And that's going to require us to be more creative than we've ever been. That strategic dynamic in terms of understanding the business and where it's going has been rooted in the work that we do, but it will never be as important as in the coming months and years. There's a just tremendous work done on the academic and the admin side in establishing a strategic plan, and the people part of it is embedded at its core. It creates an energy and an engagement with our team, because they recognize the work that they're doing is supporting some exceptional outcomes at Ontario Tech. So do we have to polish and fine tune our flex work program? Absolutely. You touched on a great point. Is there an opportunity for us, as we've been exploring the last few months, on fully remote roles and positions, other pilot projects connected to flexible work that could help support talent acquisition, again, in spaces or areas that we're not used to. As always, economic conditions and the economic climate play an important role. So the redesign on the comp side of things is always front of mind. We have to stay very attuned to what's happening, not only in the post-secondary space, but the public sector and more broadly in the provincial economy. So there's a lot to do, but those bigger pieces to scale our business, those are projects that we really haven't seen at Ontario Tech. My team hasn't seen, and it will really be able to bring to the surface, I think, some of the brilliance fits into our PD and our talent management roles.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I can see the enthusiasm though coming from you. You like clearly really pumped for the year and the work ahead. It sounds like there's nothing but opportunity here.
Yes, it is an exciting time to be here.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I really want to thank you for coming on the show and chatting with us and sharing a little bit about life at Ontario Tech U and some of your thoughts and some of the great work that you're doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Lisa.
My pleasure.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with your colleagues. Better yet, head over to iTunes and let us know. When you subscribe and leave me a 5-star review, not only do I glow from within, but more people will learn about the show and why they should listen. Until next time, keep telling the talent management truth.